Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Daybreak. I am Mark Coxon here, as always, with Jared Hillman. How are you, Jared?
Doing well.
Doing well. Nice.
I noticed.
What did you
notice? Gotta call it out. Your intro was different.
Yeah.
Right. We should tell the people.
Yeah, I guess we should. We're removing the AV from AV Daybreak. We're going to Daybreak.
We're going to Daybreak.
Just Daybreak. And I think because, you know, what we found, I mean, you and I, we tend to just gravitate towards business conversation. And so
yeah.
I felt, and a few people had told me that they thought we might be limiting the people that listen to the show by having AV so prominently in the title.
And we could be misleading those that are looking for more of an AV-centric conversation.
There you go as well. So,
you're welcome, people.
You're welcome. So it's just Daybreak. We're just doing Daybreak, a business cast. Daybreak.
Daybreak. A business on your business. Minding your business.
Minding your bit. Daybreak, minding your business. I love it. Exactly. Not too nosy. Minding your business.
No. Minding your business. Yeah.
Well, speaking of not minding my business, how's your week? What's been going on with you?
I had probably one of the most productive weekends I've had in, like, I don't know, probably 3 years, I feel like. Like, yeah. I when you have those weekends or those, like, days off and you have personal things to attack, like cleaning your house, getting the shopping done, getting this done at the house, you know, and you've procrastinated all of them for extenuating amount of times. Not this weekend, man. Not this weekend. I tell you, my wife and I, we cleaned house. And I mean that in the way people say we're cleaning house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
We did actually clean our house, but we also cleaned house on our to-do list.
So. Oh, that's awesome. So,
I'm still riding a high off of that. That's the level of adulthood that I'm at now. I'm riding the high off of getting home stuff done.
Well, you see,
high like that?
I do. I like getting things done. I mean, for us, this weekend was Thanksgiving weekend, the last weekend.
Oh, that's
was.
Right.
And so maybe a different, you know, different way of approaching a weekend. You get a 4-day weekend and part of that is typically putting up in the USA, Jared, part of that is usually putting up Christmas decorations the day after Thanksgiving. That's kind of like the, you know,
yeah,
I guess the signal that it's time to start putting up lights on the outside of your house, et cetera. Hey, I will say, I noticed you were in productive mode because you know who, remember who answered your call 7:30 in the morning on Thanksgiving?
Me. That's right. Yeah. Me. There's no rest time for this guy. You were in a drive-thru getting a coffee and here I am slaving away.
I don't do drive. I wasn't in a drive-thru. I was getting coffee. I was with my wife.
Oh.
We were going to, we went to this coffee shop called Neat in Costa Mesa because she had been to a early morning bar class. Have you heard of bar?
Yeah, we have a couple of those here.
Yep. So she was in an early morning bar class until 7. Then we got coffee and went and took a walk on the beach. So,
Meat, M-E-A-T or M-E-A-T?
Neat as in as in Nancy. Or November.
Oh, November.
Yes. Like this coffee's really gotcha. Neat.
This coffee is neato.
Or like a martini, neat.
Do you have like a favorite? Like where do you live? Like I know that you're in, I wanted to say San Diego, right?
I'm in Southern California. So I'm in Orange County, which is about an hour north, hour and a half north of San Diego, and about an hour and a half north or south of LA. So I'm kind of like right in that middle area between Los Angeles and San Diego.
So do you have like a favorite local coffee shop that you just like, this is our spot, man?
Like local within 5 minutes of driving to my house?
Yeah, that you would like walk to or drive to?
There's not one that's walkable really from here other than the conglomerate Starbucks, you know, down the street.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's one here that's owned by just by an independent business owner that roasts his own beans and does all that stuff in shop. Yeah, it's called Alissimo. It's really cool. It's here in town. But I think we travel a lot for coffee too. We'll drive 45 minutes down into San Diego County to go to different coffee shops down there or go to San Clemente, which is a beach town, and go to the pier, or Yeah, so we're kind of like, but they're all small one-off independents. They're single location chains for the most part, or not chains, single locations.
Yeah, single locations. Yes.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Those are nice, hey?
You know it
I
is.
I like those.
I do too. Yeah. And I think, I mean, even though I made a quip on, I did make a quip on LinkedIn about this the other day, but I like supporting the, you know, the whole American dream thing. You know, somebody took the time to rent a space, make coffee, try to sell it for $3 to $4 a cup. I mean, how many cups, think of rent in Southern California, how much coffee do you have to sell every day to support paying somebody to be there and paying rent?
Yeah.
It's like, I even feel bad going in there and ordering one thing. So especially during a pandemic, like I try to make sure, number one, we're tipping all the time, you know, extra heavy when we're in there. And then number two, we're always trying to buy as much other stuff as we can. So if they've got cool t-shirts or sweatshirts or take home coffee beans or any of that kind of stuff, we try to load our cart per se in there. So,
okay. So stay with me, Mark, because I'm going to do something really amazing. Okay.
Yes.
So speaking of coffee.
Yeah. Okay. I'm here.
It's an interesting, you want to call it a fad because it has like that sense of attraction, but it's not a fad because a fad is very temporary, right? And coffee's always in style. Isn't that bizarre? Like it seems like it's a fad, but it's not. And so I always wonder about like people that work at coffee shops, like your smaller ones, you're right. Your smaller coffee shops where the owners are still pouring the coffee and roasting the beans. That's a little bit different, right? Obviously those people are very passionate about what they do or, you know, they got into it for a reason, but I'm always amazed at the baristas of the Peet's and of the Starbucks, because like a lot is asked of them, you know, and they're just, they're just employees, you know, like, well, I mean, I don't mean that derogatory. I just mean a lot is asked of them in regards to how they treat customers, how they behave. Like Starbucks just has that culture. And so I'm always amazed at the staff at most chain coffee shops, you know, and fast food joints and stuff where, why do you think that is? Like, what do you think?
I think this segues perfectly.
See what I did there?
Something we're going to talk about this morning, right? I mean, I really appreciate it. That was pretty smooth, Jared. I would agree that this is very smooth. So no, I mean, I would say on a general level, we can talk about specifics based on the article that we were going to discuss a little bit today. But I think on a general level, I mean, you have to connect people to passion. You have to have some greater purpose other than, you know, coming in and pouring coffee for 6 hours, right? You have to connect people's passion to what they're doing, even though the tasks themselves may be mundane, or some people may see them as commonplace. Right. I think that's hard to do. I mean, how do you get somebody excited about pouring a cup of coffee? And it's funny that you mentioned Starbucks specifically because they were a case study in a book I just read called Illuminate, which is about becoming a torch bearer, about becoming someone who carries message forward within an organization. And when Starbucks when Starbucks went through that, they had to refocus on, they had this huge refocus on the customer. On being felt, on making it feel like the local coffee shop, on the personal connection between the barista and the person coming in the door. And they really, they doubled down on that. Like they doubled down on, we want this to feel like a place, like a living room, people can come and sit. We want the people to feel like the barista knows who they are, knows their drinks. We want to make sure. That's when they came up with the idea that if it's not perfect, we'll remake it. Like if it's not perfect, please let us know. We will remake it. There's no judgment on you. We screwed it up. It's your cup of coffee. You should get it the way you want it. That whole thing kind of came through, but they really started to refocus people on, you know, usually if you work in retail or you work in hospitality or you work in food service, a lot of people that don't like people typically don't gravitate to those types of jobs because they're people facing jobs, right? So if you can connect people's passion for each other to the larger purpose of the company, like, hey, you're launching this person's day. people come in here at 6 a.m. to get a cup of coffee. They're going to work. They're not having a great time yet. Maybe they're not all the way awake. You get to be one of the first experiences of their day, and you get to help set that mood or that tone.
So let's dig into this article, because and here's the challenge. Here's today's challenge. We're going to try. So we're talking about an article that was shared by Mr. Cristetto on Twitter and said, hey, maybe this is a topic of conversation for AV Daybreak. It's an article from fastcompany.com. It's 6 ways to help employees craft their job into their calling. And I like that he shared this with us, because obviously we've set a tone for a theme that you and I like to discuss, and what this is exactly why we have dropped the niche specific AV part of our title. But so here's today's challenge. So you and I, let's go through this article, and I want to hear, and I'll work with you too. Don't worry. I won't abandon you. I'm going to try and relate. Cause this is the thing, right? Is like, to me, when you are in a niche market, when you are in a market where people, you have to have set the path in front of you to drive towards this position. That's kind of easy to create engagement and passion out of your employees, right? Because they did 8 years at law school to become a lawyer. You know, they didn't, things like that. So what's interesting to me is if we could find 6 ways to help employees craft their job into their calling, when it's a job that people just end up at for the most part. So
yeah, no, I agree.
You know what I mean? And we've talked about this with AV, but let's get into it. Let's go through, if you're okay with this. And I'm interested, let's try and give some examples of how you would do this, whatever the 6 items are, how you would do that item at a coffee shop.
Oh, okay. There we go. I like the spin. Challenge accepted. So,
okay.
So again, yeah, Chris Netto shared this article. It's from Fast Company. And like you said, the title itself is 6 ways to help employees craft their job into their calling. So
yeah.
If somebody wants to look it up, they can look it up. But so they go through 6 ways, and there are 6 bulleted parts here. And I think the first part says the one way to help employees feel connected to their job is to institutionalize support and gratitude.
Yeah.
And I like this idea a lot, because I think I shared something this week on LinkedIn about the Styrofoam cup, talking about coffee, where this Undersecretary of Defense, it's a Simon Sinek speech that he gave to a bunch of university students.
Yeah.
And the long and short of it is it's a story about gratitude. The Undersecretary of Defense one time was actually, you know, in his role, received a ceramic cup. The next time he came back, he was retired and on his own. Same person, same venue, same audience, received a Styrofoam cup and had his own cup of coffee. And the whole point of that was, you know, that sometimes you're afforded things in life that come with your title or with your role, but they were never meant for you. You were always, you know, deserving of a Styrofoam cup, this humility piece. So this whole idea of gratitude, that, hey, we're lucky. Like, we get to be in a neighborhood where people can afford a $5 cup of coffee. We get to be in a place where people come in and they are, you know, looking for interaction, and they value what we do as a company, is why they're coming in here. You know, from a coffee shop perspective, I think that's one thing. I think another piece of gratitude that you could take away is the fact that, you know, a lot of times when you're working jobs, I mean, we all go through different stages of life, right? I was a waiter for a bunch of years working in food service. You know, having that idea that, you know, hey, somebody's giving me the opportunity to make money in a schedule that I get to work around whatever other goals I may have in life, right? And so, you know, being grateful for having a place to work, for having an employer that does that, for being able to, again, be that kind of, I guess, first touch with someone and be able to interact with the public is great. I think the idea of institutionalizing support, though, is something that's huge. And this is something I try to do with my team. Like, I try to tell them, I'm not your boss, right? Like, I'm, my job is not to tell you what to do on a daily basis. You were here before I was, you know what to do on a daily basis. My job is to block tackle. My job is to be your support system and to fight for the things you need. So I think, you know, in this way, management in those coffee shops, empowering them to take, actually take care of people and be a support system as opposed to micromanaging becomes something huge too.
Well, in regards to what you spoke to earlier too, with the smaller coffee shops, it's more likely that the owner is there pouring coffee alongside his or her staff. So I think that's one of the biggest things you can do as a manager and as an employee is you know, to be in the trenches with your staff, so to say. You know, I think most employees have this idea that, and if they don't have the idea, actually, sorry, if you don't tell them, they'll just assume and they'll make up the idea, right? So I think if you aren't there, sometimes the perception is that you're just off, you know, living off the off the sweats of their back, or I find that employees have this assumption that when you're an owner or your manager, and you're not present and you're not showing the work that you're doing for them, really, I think it starts building that kind of resentment, that especially when you try and come in and try to get some action, right? So
yeah, it's hard to be supportive from arm's length, right? Like support,
yes,
support in a way, I mean, it requires presence.
Yeah, and so,
and modeling that helps a lot. I agree.
And then gratitude as well. I know with here, with what I try to do is, you know, when I see simple things, like these are simple things that I think mean a lot. You know, when I see someone here that maybe it's not their role to be sweeping up the back shop, but they are, I'm grateful for stuff like that, because that's something that maybe I would have ended up doing later, or someone else would have ended up doing later, and they took the initiative to do something that's quote unquote outside of their scope.
Yeah.
And I think so showing appreciation for that is an easy way to share gratitude with employees. But
yeah, and I think gratitude, I want to say one more thing before we move on to the next one, but I think, you know, gratitude is the antidote for entitlement. It just is. If anybody wants to take anything away, like when you're grateful, it's hard to be entitled. And yeah, having an attitude of I am grateful for the things that I have, and I probably have more than I deserve if I look at the world as a whole. Simon Dudley, who used to work for Life Size, used to give this talk about the world. And he was talking about the 1% versus the 99%. If you remember, after 2007 to 2009, there was this whole thing about Wall Street versus Main Street, right? There was, yep, all talk in the political atmosphere. And he said, guess what? If you live in the United States of America, you're in the 1% of the world.
Yeah.
Sorry. But if you really want to take this out to a worldview, you're in the 1%, you know? And like thinking about that, like you could have been born in rural, you know, India somewhere, and you know, the river is the bathroom and also the place where you get water. And hopefully you're upstream when you're getting water for your house. You know, yeah, like there are places in the world that are like that. And like
most places.
Exactly. And when you operate from this place of gratitude for all the amazing opportunities and things that you do have, it's really hard to be entitled. And so anyways, I just think it's a great perspective to have every single day.
Well, just to carry on, like my son and I, we just had this talk. I have a 15-year-old son, and we just had this talk. It was central around a trip that I did to Jamaica. And Jamaica is not, I don't believe Jamaica is a third world country. I think it's a second world. But you know, poverty in Jamaica is a lot different than poverty, oh, yeah, in North America. Yeah. And that's, you're 100% right. People in what I've always said since that was 2 years ago, I think, that really opened up my eyes to understand that Western culture in general,
yeah,
nobody in the world lives the way that we do in Western culture with the amount of conveniences and support systems in place, you know? And so it should be easy to work from a place of gratitude within your life, if, especially if you live in Western culture.
And that's not to discount anybody's hardships. I mean, everybody's hardships are relative to their life. And I have days that, you know, that are really crappy, you know, for me personally, because we live by contrast. Right. And
yeah.
And that's the way that people experience the world is you have highs and you have lows. And
my favorite saying to that is, your water is only deep as you are tall.
Yes. There you go. I like
that. Yeah. So, okay, let's move on before we conquer all the world's problems. Let's get to number two. All right. So the next one, aim to discover and utilize everyone's unique strengths.
I like this one a lot. I hadn't thought about it in the aspect of a coffee shop, but I'm drawing those conclusions right now. I'll tell you, I tried to do this with my team. Like the first thing when I came into my new role at the company I'm at, I really wanted to find out what people were good at. Number one. And then number two, really what they liked to do, like what they loved about their job already. And I tried to make it my job to say, okay, now how do we maintain all the things you love while mitigating the things you hate and figuring out a way to grow the business? And that was always my piece. Now, if I was in a coffee shop, I would say, you know, you may have people that are creative. You may have people that are more people centric. You may have people that have really great memories. Like I went to a coffee shop once where the line was like eight people deep and the person was talking to people, seven people down in line, and saying, hey, are you doing your normal, you know, two pump latte with almond milk today? And the guy's like, oh yeah, that's what I'm getting. He's like, all right. And then by the time he got to the counter to pay, it was done. It was there, ready to go. And in fact, the person didn't even order it. That just the person behind the counter was working in that capacity. My daughter's culinary, like if she worked in a coffee shop, like give her a chance to think of new flavors, give her a chance to maybe craft a new syrup. Like there are all sorts of things you can do to lean on the individual strengths of your employees. And then you give them something to be passionate about because they get to use something that they already love in their unique job.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can't emphasize this enough, because the first part, aim to discover, that's the biggest thing. I think in that coffee shop example, I mean, I'm not saying take your team for a 5-day retreat and, you know, do the whole executive council kind of idea. I'm not saying that, but if you really pay attention and you really ask the right questions, you would get a great understanding of, you know what, so-and-so is amazing at process and they can put their head down and just get stuff done. Don't have them at the counter. Have them making the stuff. And and if that's their unique ability, is that process and that kind of implementation, they'll bang out those orders like nobody's business with precision.
Yeah.
You're right. Like when you have creative and social people, put them at the till, the people that show that your company cares, the people that make it personal. Like you said, they're, you know, Starbucks trying to make it like people's living room, like it's their house, you know?
Yeah.
So first step, discover it, pay attention. And when people are struggling in certain positions, you know, don't go in with frustration at first. Go in and just ask them like, what's causing that frustration? Because typically when people are working against their unique strength or their unique ability, that's when the frustrations start coming. If they're doing something that they're passionate about and they're doing something that they're uniquely gifted at, they're not frustrated. They're loving it.
Yeah, I think of, and it's a different example, but I think of, you know, when we used to have video stores and things like that, like having people's names on picks of movies, like Bob's pick for, you know, or letting people name drinks, or, you know, like if you're a bartender, letting them come up with their own craft cocktail or letting them name things after regular customers, or, you know what I mean? Like there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can give people agency and ownership in parts of their job, even though they don't have ownership in the business. Right. And I think that is what can ignite some passion. Like, hey, that's mine. That's uniquely mine. My talents came together to do that and people like it. And it's a reflection on me. And I think giving that opportunity is a great way to do that. And I think this one leads into the next point. So the next point,
yeah.
Point three, make connection a company priority. And I think, you know, this part says, number one, it leans on the first part, which is, you know, aim to discover people's unique strengths. I mean, I think that's one way you get to know people. But this talks about, and I think I've had people caution about this before, but I'll hedge it.
Yeah.
This goes into deepen your relationships on a personal level, right? On, you know, what do you love to do outside of work? Like, what are your motivations? Why are you even doing this job? Like, why did you take this job? Are you supporting your mother? Do you have small kids? You just need some money to go to college? Like, finding those bigger purpose and passion pieces outside of work and making a personal connection with somebody beyond the job, many times, you know, really helps them be passionate. Like, this person, my boss cares about me as a person, right? I think, I'll throw a shout out to Sal Amato, who I had at Barco, was my manager at Barco. And he's, you know, he's a like New York Italian, right? And his family was all about family. And every analogy he gave about the team was about how we were kind of a family together, right? And as be professional, don't embarrass the family, right? Was like his thing when we were, you know, and
yeah.
And he really built that. He wanted to know about our kids. He wanted to know about those things. And he didn't pry. If you were uncomfortable talking about something, that was fine. So I think you have to manage that. You have to manage that HR thing. Like, do we need to know every single thing that our employees are doing on the weekend? Of course not. But at least express interest so that if people want to share that they can.
Yeah. I think I could do a better job of this. Time pending, it does become difficult. And when you're in it, right? And so I know that you're going to hear me talk EOS all the time. And in the weekly meetings that we have, the opening like 5 to 10 minutes is all spent talking about what's working for you professionally and then what's working for you personally. And the whole intention behind that is to remind everybody that everybody has a life outside of what you see, you know. And so, like you said, what are you, you know, you're trying to support your sick mother, you've got two kids on your own, you know. And it's just a reminder that, hey, everyone's got passions outside of this, you know. So
yeah,
I really like that. Yeah,
I do too. I think I'll tell you some of the, I mean, a couple tips for me have been traveling, you know, when I travel with my team.
Sure.
If we go, I mean, there's a lot of time in between that isn't talking about exactly what we're doing at that time. You know, when we've just had a meeting, we sit down and we recap the meeting that leads into other conversations, or spending break time with people, you know, like if you're getting up from your desk to go grab a cup of coffee, you know, ask somebody on your team, like, hey, I'm getting coffee. You want to head over to cafe with me for a minute? Exactly. And just having like creating those opportunities where, and I think this is part of, I think this is part of what we're being robbed of in the pandemic kind of state right now, is these opportunities to have chance interactions or casual interactions that aren't scheduled. And, you know, I think just taking those opportunities and being mindful that stuff matters.
Those are moments of vulnerability too. Right. I think most leadership concepts and ways to become stronger leaders is by becoming vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right? So I think when you make personal connections with your team, it shows that you're vulnerable. It shows that, and I think you can gain a lot out of that as a company, but.
Yeah, we had to, we do a company book club, and it's voluntary, obviously, but, one of the books that we read as a group was Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And I don't know if you've ever seen that TED talk, but
yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I do, I think there's something to it. Is there some common sense stuff in there? Sure. But is the whole thing is just, you know, having the courage to be vulnerable.
The other thing too, when you think about that too, what's funny is when you think about why people resist vulnerability and opening up with their team is because they don't want to be put in a position where they have to like let go of that person, and they've created this personal relationship. They think it jeopardizes that ability. But when you think like that carries a large assumption that more times than not, you'd be put in that position. And I would wager that more times than not, it pays off. And so that's your gamble, right? Like if I told you that out of every 10 employees that you create a personal relationship with, one of them might put you in a precarious position when you have to let them go, but you've got 9 other strong personal employees that put their faith and their trust in you as a leader now, because you've given that to them and you've opened up to them, and they feel like that family style. So it pays off. It's a payoff.
Yeah. I think the other side of that is, you know, as an employee, as someone doing your job every day, like we kind of have a lot of companies have kind of set this, not an expectation so much, but, you know, the culture is that there's not freedom to fail, that you have to be a superhero. And if you start to be vulnerable and say that personal life is starting to really take a toll on your work, or that you need a little time to kind of reset, or you've lost some passion for what you do on a daily basis, like being vulnerable enough to say those things means you have to feel safe within your organization, because you don't want to admit weakness because you're afraid you're going to get replaced or you won't be promoted or that people start to question you. And so, yeah. I mean, I think having that personal relationship and knowing people value you as a person and want to create something that, I guess, create a role for you that acknowledges that you are a person that has other things that go on outside of this building.
Yeah.
You know, that whole freedom to fail thing is huge for me.
Well, so, I was going to take us to the next one. That takes us to the next one. So the next one here, recognize accomplishments, big and small.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. I don't know from a coffee shop perspective. I'll tell you from a perspective in my company. Like,
got it.
Coffee You're shop. Okay.
Stepping outside the challenge.
Recognize accomplishments, big and small. Well, I mean, I think I touched on this earlier. I mean, I think when somebody does something to speed up a line, somebody does something to increase customer experience, when people go outside of their job, like when you said earlier, somebody sweeping the floor in the back, like those are all small things, like very small things, but things that people didn't have to do, that people went out of their way to do, or something that somebody does very well. I mean, it's nice to have some pride and acknowledgement for what you do as a person. And it reminds me of the Martin Luther King quote, like, hey, if you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can be. Like, don't worry about what your role is, worry about excelling at what you do, you know, and having pride in your role within an organization.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have pride and take that seriously if people never acknowledge what you do, especially if your role, I hate this idea of, I guess, one employee being more important than another in a company, right? And I had to go early on in my career. They would send me out in the field with field managers, or they would make me an installer for a day, or they would, you know, they wanted me to learn what other people did within the company. And I think that's given me great perspective to when I see somebody do something well, I know how hard that job is because I tried to do it for a day. And when I see somebody that can do it day in and day out with a level of excellence, like it's really easy to go and say, wow, you really do a great job. Like I really appreciate what you do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I think like the last part of that one, acknowledging meaningful progress on your employees' work and recognizing their strengths and capabilities will go a long way to encourage their growth. So I think you're right. Five. Create peak experiences. So peak experiences are events that are unique, memorable, and exhilarating or deeply moving.
Yeah. So there's a great book. If you really want to dive into this, and we could do a whole show on this. So I'm going to try not to talk too much about this one, because this is something I believe, this is something I'm super passionate about. There's a book called The Power of Moments, and they talk about creating peak experiences. And I give a whole talk at InfoComm about how you leverage biology to enhance experience.
Right.
There are all sorts of things that you can do.
Remember, this is with your staff. This is with your own. This is internal.
I understand. I understand exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you have to create ceremonies. You have to create symbols within the business. You have to treat the the workplace experience like you would the customer experience. When somebody comes into a coffee shop like a Starbucks, the way that it is designed, the way that it is merchandised, the materials they pick for the floor and the tables are all very carefully thought out. The type of products that they put in there, the sustainability messages, the pictures on the walls, all that is very thought out to create a peak experience for the customer. What do they smell when they come in the door? What do they see? Do they see a smiling face? Do they feel like they're supporting a larger global initiative? And I think many times in work, we're like, well, if they have a chair and they have a desk, then we've provided what they need to do their work. But we don't think about how do we elevate that work experience for the employee when they're here every day? You know, does the break room have the same fit and finish that the dining room has? Because if it doesn't, you're valuing customer experience over employee experience, and you're not going to create this thing. And in this book, Power Moments, they talk about, they talk about like the onboarding, the employee onboarding experience. Here's your first experience at a company. What do most people do? You wait around for people to come by. There isn't a formal program, or you sit in 8 hours of meetings with the HR department signing manuals. You know what? That first experience should be, you know, a welcome party by your team, meeting key people. You know, the HR stuff that you fill out 18 hours of paperwork could happen on day two or day three. But why do we do that? We get in this way where we've reduced that onboarding into some group of activities that need to be legally facilitated, as opposed to really thinking like, what's going to move the needle to make this first day feel like that welcome, that welcoming?
I blame HR. I blame HR and the law, but you're right. I mean, there should be a better effort. The other thing too, that they brought up, actually two things that you talked on there, and I'm running short on time, but that's okay.
I know that. That was good.
This company example here was that this company shared experiences with their employees where people have the opportunity to learn more about each other and the impact they have on others' lives. So I think that's really cool. But into what you were talking about is the amount of effort that's put in by companies to not only create that customer experience should be equal to what they're doing to create that employee experience. It's something that I'm working on now is, and having a conversation about is, with everyone working from home, what is your responsibility as a company to now make sure that employee still has that experience?
Yeah. For anybody's power moments, they say there are four ways to create peak moments, right? That you can elevate something, you can create pride in something, you can help somebody discover insight, or you can create connection. So if you think about the way that you can elevate the work experience from those things to create some emotional elevation, to create a sense of pride, to help somebody discover something about themselves they didn't know, or to help connect, those are the four ways that you can elevate something, and you can do that in the workplace experience all the time.
Okay. The next one is, and this one we kind of already talked about, in making like meaningful connections. So the very last one here is invest in the manager employee relationship. So managers significantly influence the employee experience, but many don't get the training they need. So you hear this all the time where people don't quit people. What do they say? That people don't quit jobs, they quit managers.
Yeah. And I've seen this. I mean, I think I think, you know, the hard part for management is you're trying to serve a shareholder or a boss yourself. You have your own personal wins and needs. And many times those things are front and foremost in your mind. And you're not thinking about, you know, the interpersonal connection or the personal needs of the people that have to help you gain that result. And I think, you know, again, I think this just goes back to, what is your idea of management? Do you think your job is to tell people what to do? Or is your job to give them a framework, you know, give them a company framework with which they can maneuver within their kind of unique ways to achieve that same result? And you have to really take a lot of ego out of it. And you got to take out this idea of there's one objective way to do something. But I agree. I think all these other five points lead up to, if you're doing these things, you are investing in the manager-employee relationship. Hopefully. So, hey, I know you have a business to run. You do this every day. Hopefully you're connecting. Hopefully you're helping, Jared.
I just do this for myself.
After all that, you know, I've got to get some minds. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm looking at going, I don't want to read this article, so I'll just use up the hour I have with Mark every Wednesday to read it. No, I think there is, I liked that we took it to the level of a coffee shop, because I think a lot of people read articles like this and they go, well, that doesn't really apply to me. I mean, I run a restaurant, you know, or I run a XYZ type of business that, you know, I think a lot of times people read these articles and they think of, to me, I know I used to, I always thought of whenever you talked about, you know, really developing employees or really working with employees and having those like fun segments of a company. It's like, I'm picturing like Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm picturing like beanbag chairs and jelly bean jars. And so I have changed my view over the last few years that no, there are ways to do these things and achieve these things without giving employees raises and beanbag chairs, you know?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, if you read something like this and your initial thought is none of that advice is for me, then you probably haven't read it.
You're the problem.
You didn't listen. Yeah, seriously, because I think yeah. I think there are always lessons that you can take out of this. And there's a, you know, I think the question you have to ask is if you take each of these questions and you just say, okay, just like we did with the coffee shop analogy, right? You say, if I was to make connection a company priority at my company, what would that mean for us?
Exactly.
Right? Like that, if you can break it down to that, when you see these articles about questions and say, if this was the case, I am going to make connection a company priority. If I were to do that, what would I be doing differently than I am now? And yeah. I think if you approach it that way, like this is a piece of advice that applies to me, how do I apply it? As opposed to, oh, I'm not Google. Oh, I'm not Facebook. Like you said, we don't have bikes and beanbag chairs here. Yeah. We can't bring our dogs to work. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that. So anyways, that was a great suggestion by Chris Netto. Yep. Hopefully we made some sense of the article. Everybody can go read it. Fast Company. Maybe I'll link it in the description of the show. But hey, I want to honor your time. You got stuff to do. We've got a work day to go to. We've got to go be passionate about our roles today and our businesses. So hey, everybody, thanks for joining us on Daybreak. This is Mark and Jared, and we'll see you next week.